Yeah, I tried to like do Zoom in last Thursday, but there's a password. Is there?
Sorry. I think there is a password. It should be on the recording.
Like, but, yeah, I just watched the recording, but.
Yeah, the password. I think I put on the website.
Okay.
Should be this. Without capitals.
All right. Yeah, I'll try that next time.
Yeah, sorry. Sure. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Welcome. Seems that we can only have class on Thursdays with the snowstorms on Tuesdays, right? What's up with that? I had one student ask me, I didn't think I'd put a password on the Zoom session, but if I did, this is what I would use. And so maybe write that down. If you forget it, it's the tail number of our Citation Research aircraft. And of course, the capital ends in these. I'll have to check that. But if it is, that's what it is. And hopefully you can watch the Zoom recordings and stuff too. So. November Delta, right? Yes. Delta Sierra, I forget what it is. Delta Sierra, right? I forgot what the number is. See, I'm so bad. Delta Sierra, right?
Yeah.
Delta, not November. Delta is the Sierra. Yeah, you should have saw, we had a weather briefing yesterday, and the scientist was trying to show the flight plan for this flight that they flew today, and he had points A to E, and so they kept giving him phonetic alphabet, Echo and Charlie, and he finally, after being told three times what they were, got to using the he says, I don't speak aircraft or something, kept saying. Delta Sierra, yeah. So that's what it should be. Where do I get the DN from? Anyway. So thought we'd start today with something that's kind of related to the operational weather mod, because a lot of times you fly the airplanes and people are watching for the storms. So this is the flight I've been watching today, a P3 NASA aircraft went out and flew this track back and forth here. So they left from Virginia, flew out here and go back and forth. And so I can watch all the data being downloaded. And I got quite a few, maybe I could turn this off so I can show you. Turn back on the pressure altitudes that are a little bit more intuitive than in putting these in kilometers that would confuse you. So you'll see these are the legs for the altitudes. So they go back and forth and they just step down and go back and forth along this 500 kilometer long leg. And then they did this last one here. And just before coming over here, they decided to head back. So of course they climb up and are headed back home and should land well before the class is over with. So, and then I can look at the data and chat with people on the airplane. But does anybody know why they were flying this particular place? So we're interested in this snow. Yeah, so big storm. So here's the radar data. So if you look at the radar data, they're flying along here, basically. And this radar data is depicted with the green is where you have rain. And then I think the pink is freezing rain. and then the blue is snow. So they kept flying through from the rain side to the snow part of this snowstorm. It's along frontal line of clouds. So it was very stationary, so she could do a long line on this. So a lot of times you have the same type of stuff when you're doing an operation. So people on the radar, they'll get your flight track and show you and watch how you fly and see how the storm's developing and decide if they want to move the aircraft and see exactly where it is. But a lot of times when you do the cloud seeding, you don't necessarily see the clouds that show up on the radar because you want to get the new growth that have small droplets in there. So I don't know. This one, they didn't report too much turbulence. So they did a one on Saturday that was kind of turbulent, I heard. So it had a lot of pockets of embedded convection. So I thought I'd show you that. This will show you a little bit what I get to do to follow, but we have scientists on board that direct the aircraft to get these exact levels because we're looking at specific things. And so they want to target particular temperatures in the snowstorm. So, and the wonderful technology we have nowadays. Okay. So we are grading your assignments that you're supposed to have turned in on Tuesday. And see, I think everybody turned it in. If you didn't, talk to me and maybe we can give you a few points for being late. And so they're being graded by Judah, the TA. So hopefully you'll get some grades here in the too distant future for that word assignment. So I posted another assignment about critical thinking. And so the same general idea, look at this article that's referenced here. I could pull it up and then answer the five questions and upload the assignment and by next Thursday. So I posted it like I did last time and it seemed to work. So must hope that our technology keeps going in on this. And if we can have class for more than once a week, we hopefully catch up and we'll have a exam sometime here. Okay, so that's posted. And I want to talk next. I'm sharing that. So any questions about the assignment? Anything? Okay. Let's see how this works. Okay. If that goes. I don't want to do that. Let's see how I can hide the screen. have the problem again with. Lets me show you the PowerPoint the slide, but it doesn't let me move it there. Okay. I'll do it this way. See it. Okay, just keep the stuff at the top. And now I can move back and forth. Oh, okay, this is the. Oh, it doesn't. Hold on a second. I know what's wrong. Okay, now I got our set. Yes. You couldn't download it?
It doesn't open anything. It opens the USA Today website, but there's
nothing
there.
Oh. Well, let me see. Because I tried the link. Good thing you tested it. Because I know it's an older article, but I did open it. Let's copy. Okay. Did you try to? So here's the. Oh, wait, that's the first link. That's not the article link.
The form works.
The first one up there, yeah, that's the Forbes one. That just gives you the background of where the quote's from. But the actual article you need is this one. So, did you try to copy? Oops.
Okay, it works.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the hyperlink in the that's embedded is not there. So, have to try to copy and paste it. Now, try to fix it. It's probably the hyperlink that's no good. That's within it. So I'll try to fix it and upload a new version. But if you copy and paste it, you should see the article. So all right, thanks for letting me know that. I'll try to fix that. So that's the hard part of the assignment, getting into the article. Okay, now let's go back to So we talked about some social impacts last time. So today we want to talk about economics, because typically people that are funding these projects are interested in the economic impacts of what they're doing. And also we'll talk about the cost benefit, because it's going to take some resources to put fuel in your airplane, fly around, and do that. So we want to know, is the benefit of what you're doing in more than the cost that you have to put into the operation? So that's what the economic impact is. And we have some data and some references I give about that. Oh, okay. So the potential gains, or potentially what you can have as an output for a project, is increased snow, increased rain, hail reduction. So the hail reduction is better yields and less property damage. And then one that's not done too often, but we're doing some research on now, is fog modification or reduction. So that's why, fewer delays and cancellations in your aircraft flights. So I got stuck in Fargo on December 15th because of all the fog, and they couldn't land the planes. So we didn't have any to take off. And so it got delayed and canceled. So if you could clear the airports of the fog, then you would have higher visibility and be able to operate more, and even on the ground for some of the ground operations too. So that's why I have the picture of what a meteorological trailer here is. Right now it's out at the near the Fargo Jet Center, just on the north-south runway in Fargo. And we hope to do some touch and goes and burn some furs when we have some super cooled liquid water and fog, so that we can demonstrate how well it works to dissipate the fog. So if anybody wants to let me know when it's gonna be foggy next, please tell me so we can set this up. That's what my student is doing, and hopefully he'll get the forecast right. And then I just have a picture here showing all the instruments we have on here, cameras. And the main one is we got a couple of visibility sensors. So, but we also have some cameras here that we take pictures of. So that would really be convincing for people to see the visibility differences for that. So that's kind of an active area of research. The snow increase is probably the most well-established type of technique. So, cut off the picture here, but the, so basically, when you do this, you have economic models, particularly in a place where you want to do it for agriculture. You have to look at how the weather affects crops and crop yields. So in this case, you can look at precipitation enhancement. You know, if you got more rain over the growing season, you can get more precipitation on the soil and benefit the plants. And you can look at how this affects different things for the crops. So what's one of the major crops in Western North Dakota that they have that might benefit from the farmers grow and I heard corn and
beets.
Sugar beets are more just here in the valley.
Soybeans,
yeah. The corn is not quite that far west, and that'd be like in Fargo is the northest part of the corn. But what do you grow that's a crop north of the corn in more temperate, colder climates? They grow a lot of wheat out there, different varieties of wheat. So not as much corn, but so you really want to look at what they're growing and how much value you have in that. So here's an example of the economic gains you can have for rainfall increases. It increases the yield. So one of the things, you know, yield is how much you get per acre harvested. And here you have given wheat at the top, barley, oats, flax, sunflowers, soybeans, and different types of beans and stuff that they grow. But a lot of it's wheat and barley. I'm not sure. Flax is another type of grain, I think, and that's pretty popular. So you want to look at it and how much it grow in different regions. And they did these economic studies for different parts of North Dakota for this. So there's a study here that's referenced by people at North Dakota State University, agricultural experts to look at the economic impacts. So one of the things you need is how much are you going to increase the precipitation during a typical year? So typically the amounts that they take for this is, you know, 5 or 10% increases in the precipitation. So who remembers how much the annual precipitation varies? Yeah, so it's quite a big variation. So these are small increases compared to your year-to-year variations. So a lot of these studies, they do it over, many decades to see how that will change. So you can apply it to different current project areas, and you can apply it statewide to look at the if you had a bigger program. And then you can also, so this is the numbers they come up with between rain enhancement and hail suppression. So they do both for the operation program in North Dakota. And you can look at the 5 and 10% increase in the precip. And of course, the hail suppression numbers just are the same, but then you get a larger increase in the amount of rain enhancement if you get a higher percentage. So yeah, look at the acreage planted. And then you can look at, both, I guess the, they got the statewide impact here is what's given in the second column. And then the first one is the average of how much is planted. So the idea here is that, you can have a combined effect on a order of $100 million. So you're talking a lot of money for a large area So, and the operations will cost on the order of $1 million or something. So, of course, this is for the state, which is not the whole program. So, let's look at some of the breakdowns of this in terms of what the cost and benefits are. So that's why I said, okay, so I'll just skip to the bottom here. I remember the numbers about $1 million. So if you add up all the costs, you got $900,000. You know, how much the airplane costs, how much it costs to do the hair suppression, the what you get for the, you know, how much it costs to do, you know, seasonal rainfall. And, you know, my takeaway is I just look at big numbers, right? You know, $900,000 million is kind of the total project cost because of the number of airplanes and the amount of time you have. And so it's a pretty, you know, significant cost to do the program, but you need to look at then the benefits of the program. And there's numbers here in terms of what you can get in terms of, you know, looking at direct economic benefit per acre planted, and then you multiply that by the number of acres. So this is more like 22 million or something in the Western United, Western North Dakota, West Central. So the big idea here is that you got these huge cost benefit ratios of, you know, 20, 30, 40 to one, which is really makes it attractive for funding a project. So it's doing these operations is one of the cheapest ways to get water. You know, if you compare this to what some other methods that you might have for obtaining more water.
Transporting it via pipeline.
So transport it from pipelines or, yeah. So, you know, and I work in Saudi Arabia, which is a big desert, and they transport it across the whole country to the middle of the country, 400 miles with a pipeline that I've seen. So you got to have the water to put in the pipeline. So you could take it from a reservoir or someplace. But if you don't have a reservoir, what do you have to do?
Drill for it.
So you could drill, you can take the groundwater up, but that's finite because you got to replenish that, or else you just keep depleting the groundwater. So where do you think this pipeline comes from in Saudi Arabia? The ocean or the sea? That comes from the Arabian Sea. And so they have huge amounts of desalinization plants there. And if you have inexpensive oil that you can burn to render plants, then you can desalinate them. So I've been in the UAE, United Arab Emirates, they have 6 major desalinization plants. And one of them, 5 of them are on the Arabian Sea, but one's on the Indian Ocean, because you can have tides and stuff that will affect all the plants. So they actually pump it up over the mountains. So, and they have cities of 2 million people where they have about 1 to 2 days worth of water stored. So it's very much of a concern for them. So you talked about the reservoirs. They started actually doing the opposite. They desalinate it and pump it into the reservoir to start storing it. So if you have enough energy, you can desalinate it, but it's very costly. So it's orders of magnitude more than doing the wet them up. So if you get more of an increase, obviously you get higher yields. So we're not going to do desalinization or something because you don't have an ocean close by. But we can increase it, and it's a lot more cost effective. And then if you want to look at big numbers, you can look at the statewide impact, which are on the order of more of $100 million if you want to do it statewide. So, and then of course, if you get bigger programs, then it's a little bit more cost effective because you don't, you got economics of scale where you can do a bigger area. So next, hail suppression. So this is separate from the rain enhancement. So I got the picture of the hail here, and then I got the picture of what happens to wheat crops when it hails. There's really cool satellite images and stuff. You can see it just basically damages all the hail, and you can't harvest it. So a lot of this data is available because a lot of the wheat that's insured. So target control comparisons is that you look at one area that you target to do operations, and you have another area where you control, you don't do anything. And you would say that these are both similar areas, and one you're going to treat and one you're not, and then you compare the two. So that's how they get the direct benefit of the $34 million for agriculture. So again, big numbers here for the benefits. I already mentioned the cost depends on the size of the program. So the cost is about 40 cents an acre. That's to do both rain enhancement and hail suppression. So the numbers, again, it's, depends a lot on the assumptions, but the idea is you got 30 to 50 to 1, depending on if you take 5 or 10% for the increase. So
is there a procedural difference between what you do for
a somewhat. Typically in a North Dakota project, they would target the hail suppression as a first priority. And then you do the rain enhancement. It depends on the storms and the times of the year. But in some sense, it's pretty similar in the fact that you still use silver iodine to seed the super cool water. So we'll talk about that in detail in a little bit later in the class. But the basic idea is you use the same airplanes, the same type of materials. You might target it a little bit different, and the storms might be a little different.
Okay.
But basically, if you do some hail suppression, you're going to enhance the precipitation. You can't avoid that in some sense. So it's kind of like, I think they're more interested in doing hail suppression, and the rain enhancement comes as a bonus in some sense. But it all depends on who's the winners and losers and stuff. And but that's another reason why North Dakota rewrites and does it in the western part of the state, because it's very helpful, you know. So just west of, just east of the Rocky Mountains, there's a big area for hail. So Denver area, North Dakota, up in Calgary. So them areas get a lot of hail. So that contributes to the usefulness and benefits of the program because of the amount of hail that they get. Sometimes you have the direct benefit, and then you can have multipliers that add some additional benefits. So you can have a factor of three benefit to them. So that's the indirect benefits to not having, you know, the file insurance claims and stuff like that. You can have tax revenue that comes to the projects. So that goes back to the reasons for these projects. The main and one of the driving ones is the large cost benefit ratio. Sorry, I should say that the right way. Gotta be a large benefit to a low cost. And the relatively low cost of the initial investment. If you're going to do a desalinization plant, a pipeline, river diversions, them are all going to take a long time. Sometimes you may not need the rain increase. And with all these programs, as I said before, you have winners and losers. So typically you use the 5 to 10% increase. There's other benefits, besides agricultural. Power companies look at increasing power generation, can have benefits of 3 to 10. So that's in Idaho, they got Idaho Power that does weather modification for this reason. And then some places out west, you have, a lot more cost for the water. So, and then this is a table I found for some of the, amounts of water that it costs the people in the state. So out west, you have the highest cost for your water because it's not so readily available. So adverse effects for the economics, some people benefit, some won't. If you get snow, that could be a bad thing. You might want to think that maybe there's some type of adjustment that would be useful for some people that suffer some adverse effects. And then you have to look at how you do the pricing effects, because sometimes it's not obvious that necessarily having better rain will actually make more money for the farmers. You always think that you have higher yields and stuff, but if you got a low demand because you get very good crops, it doesn't always translate into more profits. So it gets complicated with the economic models. So that's the story of economics. So questions about economic benefits? Yes.
Is it easy to get people to see those benefits?
No. There's a couple of these studies. There's not a whole lot of them. And you know, so, and it's complicated in the sense that you have to have the assumptions of like the 5 or 10%. So that has to be based on some other science papers. So you have to, you know, the people that do that type of assessment, and it's more like what I do is an atmospheric scientist. Then you got to know a lot about the crops and the economics there and then economic models too. So, you know, you got to have that reliable economic models.
Yeah.
So it's, and then, you know, but, you know, if you can kind of approximate some of this stuff, right? So if it's like, if the cost was like 1 to 1.5, and, you know, the uncertainty in a lot of these models, you know, you could say it's going to cover that. But when you get these cost benefits that are like 1 to 30, you would think that the uncertainties that are in there are still pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you're sure you're going to get, you know, some benefit out of it. You know, maybe it's not 1 to 30, maybe it's not 1 to 50, but it probably is not negative. You know, it's probably, so that's one of the best scenarios is, you know, lots of variability in these numbers. But because of the numbers we get are so big, it's hard to not see that there's some benefit to it.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing, but the exact numbers and winners and losers, it's a lot of there's some uncertainty in that. But, you know, there's been several studies, and this one's based, there's a couple of references here that are based on a little bit older work. Some of the newer work are a little bit more sophisticated. And regression models, but a lot of it is based on some assumptions that you really don't know. Or you can argue about sometimes. So the biggest one is the controls. You know, it's hard to know in any of these statistical, the hardest thing is, you know, is this other area that is not seeded, is that really the same as the area you seeded? And so, and that's sometimes what this newer study did. You know, if you have counties that do the program for several years, 5 or 10 years, and then they stop, or they haven't done it and they added the program, then you can kind of see, okay, well, what's the difference there? You know, and that way you have, you know, the same area, right? And they started doing it, does the hair reduction go down? Okay, but you can say, oh, well, my weather for the last 10 years hasn't been the same.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really knowing that that control. So that's, you know, a lot of people can be deceptive sometimes with the statistics. So that's why you need some of the statistics with a good method, you know, a good scientific methodology that goes behind that. So hopefully you get multiple lines of evidence that kind of point you to the same way. But I wouldn't necessarily just believe one type of study. So statistical studies are are complex in some ways. So it's very mathematical. Okay. Let's see here. I want to try to make sure I keep going in on stuff. Let me try to pull up the next lecture here. I gave you something about airplanes on the flight here. Maybe I can pull. Oh, my other website. Yeah. Just to take a, put a check on my airplane here. They went back and seems like they landed now. Let's see. Yep, they're on the ground here. I could get the, because they're here and I see that their ground speed is pretty low. Sorry, they don't actually get a zero ground speed because of the precision of the way they're doing in the data. And I think they, because we like some data that always has some speed in it for some of the stuff we do, they limit it to a low value. So, but you'll see that they came down and they landed. So as we were talking, and then all my students now are having the fun of downloading their data, and we'll get the, if that data set to is the reason for the fright. And we can spend years trying to figure out what in the world they measured. So, I think they probably got a pretty good data set today. It's nice the storm didn't move very fast. So, okay. Okay, next topic is unintended weather modification consequences. So, you know, we want economic benefits is the intended consequences. So what about some ones that we don't intend to happen? So basically changes due to crowd seeding and other activities that are not intended. So a couple of my cute aircraft pictures here. One with the Citation and one with when we're seeding in North Dakota. So so as like the statistical studies, the you can have a lot of possible interactions due to crowd seeding. The crowd seeding, as I illustrated before, is mainly you take something like silver iodine and you change the super cold water to ice. But that change changes the thermodynamics, you know, it releases heat. You could change the pressure fields, downdrafts, outflow, the dynamics of the storms can intensify. You can have longer, larger storms, longer rip storms, and change of the motion. So, and actually, some of the rain enhancements is usually not the precipitation that you get more rain. It's not necessarily from a more intense rain. It's usually that the storms last longer. So it's not that it rains harder, it rains longer. But exactly how to you know, understand that process can be difficult. There's also some microphysical effects. Downwind transport of the material. So you release this material from the aircraft and it doesn't go necessarily where you want it to. It can go outside your target area. You know, it can be dispersed in different parts of the crowd. It doesn't enter the crowd. gets into the wrong parts of the crowd, which is the animal parts. It can go into a crowd and not affect the super cooled water or in being the wrong places in the crowd and be trained, and then can move to other places that you don't want it. And you can have, you know, if you increase the ice in the crowds, and then you can get bigger crowds with bigger shields that can occur. You can also have, there have been studies on what we call extra area effects. Looking at precipitation, for example, downwind of a seeded target areas. So there's been studies in Arizona. You know, effects in different downwind or other areas. And small increases in areas that are downwind. And so this also makes it difficult to do assessments, because if you're trying to seed a target area, you can't use a downwind area as a control because you may be inadvertently affecting that. So that makes it harder for the downwind effects. So there's other inadvertent weather modification effects, typically due to human activities. So the ones that we try to do at crowd seeding are effects that we want, but there's a lot of human changes and activities that affect the weather that we don't want and are not planned. And so this lecture addresses some of them inadvertent ones, so you know about them. And know the differences. You know, and they can be greater. You know, we can have precipitation effects due to pollution or other changes that can be greater than all the operational programs. Also, if there's, like I said, you know, there could be inadvertent effects that affect weather modification projects, you know. That's why if your climatology, your precip can change to have an effect on the area. So a lot of pollution in the country, like India or China, they can have big cities that affect their pollution. That could be more than what you do with a planned operational type of program. So you can have lots of different scales to this. Local ones are kind of obvious. Show you a nice picture of rivers that flood. And then you know, you can have up to global ones, being the most one is increase in the carbon dioxide can have an effect on global temperatures. Lots of different things can be affected: visibility, sunshine, cloudiness, precip, thunderstorms, temperature, winds, fog, humidity, and that. Winds or something. But there's lots of effects. One of the things I just think about when I think of winds and temperatures are the big wind turbines that we have now in North Dakota. Has anybody seen the big wind farms? You know, you have, so of course that take out the, you know, if you're gonna use that wind, that can decrease the wind. But there's other studies that it actually changes the temperature profiles. And so it actually makes it, the surface temperature a little bit warmer because of the mixing of the turbines. So, so a lot of times, you know, inadvertent effects are very apparent in urban areas. But you can have non-urban that. We're all cultural, agricultural. So these are different types of effects you can have. And I listed here so we can talk about each one of them. Urban being the most pronounced and ones that we think about most often. And one of the things is urbanization that can have changes on the weather, but particularly is precipitation. So a lot of times it's more of just, you know, changing the surface. If you pave areas, if you take a field, even here, right? You know, 30, 40 years ago, all the area, particularly south of Clifford and Odegaard here, it was all farm fields. So this is a small town, but it's built up. So these urban effects will change the radiation, the heat, temperatures of the cities. And so there's model studies that we look at to see how that changes the precipitation. So downwind of cities, you typically have less precipitation. And that's a lot due to land surface changes, but also can be due to pollution and aerosols. And this is one example of what you should know about like urban heat islands. If you look at a graph here, afternoon temperatures, and you look at the difference between the rural areas where you have lots of trees, and then you look at the cities, we have big, tall buildings, concrete, the temperature go up and you get these islands in there. So one way to increase the climatology of the temperature in your state is wherever you're measuring temperature at, build a whole bunch of buildings and stuff around that, right? So your state will get warmer. So be careful where you measure things because things can change around that local area. Less water for evaporation. The trees are very good at circulating water. They really change the humidities and stuff. So gases, particles, I call them aerosols, can be a big problem and change. So this is just examples of a couple of the pictures. You can see the cities and the greens. So you can also change the winds, aerodynamics and how they circulate in the water and the wind flowing over it. It gets warm near these buildings. Also, you can have a lot of roughness and a lot of turbulence in these buildings. So if you find small unmanned aircraft, that's one of the research topics is, you know, if you're near these buildings, you got winds, they're very different around the buildings than they are in a nice open field. So here's an example of the heat for a city. You can see the heat temperature differences here. And this is, temperature keys here. You know, this is, you know, like 1 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit, but it goes up to 9 or 10. So you got 10 degree Fahrenheit difference changes due to change in the cities. So, and these are, you know, large effects on temperature and also on precipitation is probably a lot larger than what you would have in a weather modification program. So here's one study that looked at St. Louis and found significant changes in a city and downwind, 30% increase in rainfall. So that's 30%. Now think of the other numbers we had. You know, we're only using 5 or 10% from a weather modification program. Okay, you know, hundreds of percent of natural variability year to year, but you know, 30% changes just from urbanization. There's been studies, the other one that comes to mind, it's a little bit newer, is in Atlanta, Georgia and stuff, downwind of Atlanta, and how they built up. Stronger winds and hail was also studied. So non-agricultural land use changes, a lot of increased radiation. You can have droughts because of the fast runoff. You can have mining and stuff in rural areas that will change the surface conditions. So these changes along with burning, agricultural irrigation can have changes on your land, be it agricultural or rural. And a lot of these changes have bigger effects than if you have a weather modification program. And the last one, we can talk about transportation. And that, of course, we have airplanes with exhaust, particle emissions. So from the trails. And you get enough of these. So here's the picture I took when I was out at Walps getting ready for the P3 aircraft, and there was a nice clear day and you could see all the contrails. So I took a picture of a couple of them. You get ice crystals, and these can change because you can get these big areas for persistent ice crystals that can change your radiation. And then I will end with a couple more climate type of slides. So one of the biggest climate changes is fluorocarbons that cause ozone hole. So how many of you heard of this? Anybody? Yeah. So where does the fluorocarbons come from? Refrigerators. So they were able to make chemicals that are a little bit more reactive. The original ones, they were so great because they would never break down. But that's a problem when they got into the atmosphere. So they never got removed, they built up, and they could make it up into the stratosphere. So above where your airplanes fly, very stable, long-lived. And then they could make it to very cold places like Antarctica. So I've done some studies people I work with studying Antarctica cold zone hole. The other one is carbon dioxide. We burn stuff, any fossil fuel. So it's a chemical reaction. We're taking a hydrocarbon and combining with oxygen. And the end result is carbon dioxide. So that is shown here, one of the more famous plots. This is temperature change. Sorry, to show you the carbon dioxide increase, but we have measurements of carbon dioxide from places like at Mauna Loa in Hawaii, very remote areas, long-term measurements high up on a mountain where you can see this long-term type of changes. Carbon dioxide warms it, and then dust and clouds tend to cool the planet. So the way I understand it, you got to understand the balance between them. And that's some of the research I've done is looking at direct impacts of particles, how they scatter light, and also indirect impacts on how the particles, you have increases in the particles that form droplets, they increase the number of droplets in the cloud, and it could change how refracted the clouds are. So the end result is you want to understand that there's these other human changes. And I talked to one scientist once, and they didn't really understand, believe that you could have direct modifications of the atmosphere. And I said, well, what about indirect ones? Don't you believe that we can change them? Oh, yeah, sure. We're changing them all the time. Well, nature doesn't really know if you intend to do something or not. I mean, the physics and the mechanisms are the same. So there's a lot of, studying both of them can help understand what's going on, because the physics and the environment's not gonna really care and behave differently if you intend to do it, or if you doing it something unintentionally. So that's a reason to think about weather modification. And there's big research projects in that. And a lot of times when we talk about weather modification, we talk about both intended and unintended consequences. So I got through the two lectures and pretty much on time. So I will stop here and you can do your assignments. I can see, I think they got a public tracker. They're gonna fly tomorrow with my P3 aircraft. So if someone's very bored, you can go see if you can find a public tracker and watch the airplane. And it's due next Thursday. So I'm trying to give you a week. So hopefully you can see the stuff on the other ones. But you can turn it in on Tuesday. We covered all the material. So. Yes, have a good weekend.